Hello, everyone. This is David Hayward, and I want to welcome you to the Lasting Supper podcast. Today, I'm talking with Ann Clay, also known as Ruth, a member of the Lasting Supper, about our common experiences that we shared at Streams Ministries International with John Paul Jackson. We were there together at the same time for a while. So we're just going to discuss this for a little bit, and hope you find it interesting.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are you, David?
I'm great, Ruth. Oh, Ann. So you go by Ann Clay on Facebook.
Yes, only because that was the name. That's the name of my professional photography commercial business. Right. And it just kind of took off. Everyone called me Ann. Mm-hmm. And then when I went on Facebook, I wanted it to be, you know, I wanted people, my customers, to friend me. And right. So I couldn't go by Ruth because they wouldn't know who I was. And then I started to feel like a liar. So then I just took on the whole persona of Ann Clay. So, yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So just so everybody knows, the person I met in New Hampshire was at Streams Ministries was Ruth.
Yes.
And we became friends pretty quickly. And yes. You and your family. And you even came up here to visit us.
Yeah,
sometime.
We did. Yep.
After everything blew up.
That was really fun visiting you, not the blow up part. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the other day I was at my mom and dad's visiting them because my dad had sort of a downturn, but he's doing fine now. But anyway, good. I don't know how it started, but I just started telling them a little bit about the story of what happened in New Hampshire. And because they haven't heard the whole story, part of it was because I didn't think they could handle it. And part of it was because they just wouldn't have any comprehension of what was going on. Cause they always thought some of that stuff was kind of weird anyway. But, right. When I was telling them the story, I was getting all choked up and emotional. Like it just really, was overpowering, you know? So anyway, I just shared that moment with, the people on the Lasting Supper and, some people were like, please tell us what happened. So I thought, well, maybe the best way would be to get you on here because that's where we met and just share our stories, maybe talk a little bit about what happened. And, and then if people want to follow up with some questions or maybe we could do a video conference, we could follow up with that. So,
yeah, I think that's a great idea. It's always good to talk about it. One for healing, but for healing for others too. You want to make sure that something like this doesn't go to waste.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good way to put it.
Yeah.
So when I arrived at Streams, mm-hmm. I'll tell the backstory too in a little bit, but when I got to Streams, it was the summer of 2002, okay. August of 2002. And you were already there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was.
How
yeah.
How long were you there?
Let's see. I got there in April of 2002.
Oh.
And, so it was only a few months before you, but they really had just started up, I think, February, March. So I got there pretty quick after they started. I didn't want to miss anything. So, mm-hmm. my husband actually got a job in New Hampshire just because he wouldn't move us out there if he didn't have a job. So we had to wait for him to get a job to move there.
Right.
And then, we lived with friends for about a month and a half. And until our house was ready. And then we were full swing. I started working at Streams right away.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. John Paul had, I went to his conferences on Dreams. And when I was back in New Jersey, we were pastoring a church that was falling apart. It was an older congregation and they were dying and they were acting like drowning people. They were just, mm-hmm. killing the rescuers. And so I hit my knees in prayer and just started praying for a miracle and got very involved in the whole revival movement, renewal.
Yeah.
And John Paul came to New Jersey to do his 101, 201 classes. And so I signed up with a bunch of people. And after being in, I think I took three classes with him, and he would pray over you, and he'd say, God impart those dreams and visions that I have into these people. And I started having dreams and visions about living in New Hampshire mm-hmm. and being a part of Streams Ministry. So I used to email him, and he'd say, yeah, those are true words from God. And then he offered me a job one day, and that's how I ended up there.
So what was your job at Streams?
Well, that was kind of a weird thing because he took me on to do one thing, but, it, And I don't even remember what exactly it was he wanted me to do. He kind of spouted off some kind of job. Maybe it was customer service or something. And I got there and immediately I was put on the database cleanup to transfer everything from the Apples to the Word system. And I literally sat in a closet for 2 months working on that tirelessly. It was a terrible, terrible job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a little bit of background on John Paul Jackson's Streams Ministries. It began in Texas, right?
Right.
And that's where his home was. Now, John Paul's passed away this last year.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that. But yeah. I speak, you know, we're speaking true stories, but not out of maliciousness, because, you know, the guy's gone. And John Paul and I did exchange emails before he died. Mm-hmm. And, had somewhat of a understanding. But anyway, so he started his ministry. Actually, he started his ministry in Kansas City. He was one of the Kansas City prophets.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And there's a book out on the Kansas City prophets, and he was one of them. And there were seven of them or something. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they kind of separated and went their own ways. And then he started his ministry, Streams, in Texas. Mm-hmm. And then, he started doing his seminars on dreams and prophecy and did his speaking and also writing books. Right. And he felt God called him to move to New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Somebody had given them land there that included a mountain that was considered holy or something.
And yes, the pinnacle.
The pinnacle, that's right. Oh, yes. Man. And so they moved there and everything. So anyway, my background on John Paul is similar to yours. Up to 95, I was a Presbyterian minister. And I was totally out of the loop when it came to Vineyard or the renewal, all this. I'd never heard a thing about it. I have no idea why, but I was completely out of the loop. Mm-hmm. And then one day, I was getting dissatisfied and discontent and looking for something else. Then one day I came across an article in, maybe it was Christianity Today or something like that, where it talked about John Wimber.
Oh, yeah.
And the Vineyard movement and also the renewal thing, and it mentioned the Toronto Airport Vineyard, and I don't know, that started something rolling inside me, because Lisa and I both met in the Pentecostal church. And so I don't know, you know, anyway, within that year I quit the Presbyterian church, and long story short we moved here to where we live now because of this Vineyard church that was here that was very much into renewal. Mm-hmm. And, all the crazy stuff, like dreams and prophecies and healing and crazy worship, but we loved it, actually.
And, so did I.
And one of the things that this church did was conferences. We'd have huge conferences, and they would bring in the big names, like, you know, worship leaders like David Ruiz and people like that, and also bring in people like Graham Cook and Bob, another prophet guy, Kane, Paul Kane,
yeah,
Paul
yep.
Kane,
Bob Jones,
Jim Cole, Jim Gall. Cut. Jim Gall.
Oh, Gall, yes.
Paul Kane, John Paul Jackson included. And we met John Paul, and I don't know, there was something, he was drawn to Lisa and I somehow. Mm-hmm. And we were always sort of picked out and given prophetic words over from the front. And anyway, within the year, I became the pastor of that church, and we continued to have John Paul come and speak. So we became pretty close. Mm-hmm. But what was really weird, what started our relationship was... The present pastor of the church, when we moved here, the present pastor at that time, he secretly told Lisa and I, he took us out and said, I want you to become the pastor of this church because I'm leaving to go back home to plant a church in my hometown. Mm-hmm. And then that next weekend, we went to a John Paul Jackson conference in a nearby city. And Steve, the pastor, said, John Paul, could we meet you? We'd like to chat. So we had our whole leadership team there too.
Okay.
So we were sitting around a big lunch table in a restaurant, and Steve said, John Paul, do you have a word for us, you know, kind of thing, you know, they used to do, right? Yeah. And John Paul looks around the table. There's about 10 of us there. Mm-hmm. He looks around the table and he looks at me and he looks at Steve, the pastor at the time. He said, well, he said, I don't know how you're going to take this, but the authority of this church rests on his shoulders. And he pointed at me.
Wow.
And it freaked everybody out because nobody else knew Steve was leaving except mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And here he's basically saying, I'm to be the pastor of the church and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, this is how our whole relationship started. And John Paul would, you know, he would really freak me out sometime with his prophetic words.
Yeah.
And long story short, we formed a relationship, and eventually he asked, he loved the way we did church at Rossi Vineyard. He liked my style and everything. So he asked me to come down and plant a church in New London, New Hampshire for mm-hmm. streams and for the area. Mm-hmm. And we did. We went in 2002, the summer. Yeah. We went.
Yeah.
And, that's when we met you guys. We started a church.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, the church had already started.
That's right.
John Paul had already taken charge of starting it before you got there, but yeah.
Yeah, so there was a church going of a...
Yeah.
So then we formed a leadership. There was worship teams, you know, and stuff like that. And you guys were involved too.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember we did worship together when you first moved there. Right. I remember the first time you and Lisa showed up, I looked at you guys and I thought, wow, they're cool. They are so cool. But we did worship together for a while until Trevor into the mix. Yeah. Yeah. That was fun.
That's right.
Trevor. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it got weird though pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And because John Paul's established me as the pastor of the church, but there was something weird going on. Because people would come to me with their problems. And sometimes it had to do with their work, which was streams. Sometimes mm-hmm. it had to do with him. And it got really, really awkward and kind of conflict of interest stuff on his part. Because, you know, he was the head of streams and yet this church, but he wanted me to be the pastor. But yet people looked to him. So it just got really, really strange really quickly.
Right.
And what makes the story start to get really sad for Lisa and I was in, I think it was October or November. I can't remember now, early November, late October.
Yeah.
Her dad came to live with us because he was dying with cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was a veteran, so we had veterans affairs, you know, come in and help at home and sort of hospice at home kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my goodness, it just got really weird really quick. And the strain between John Paul and I got pretty weird pretty quickly too. Mm-hmm. When did it start getting weird for you?
You know what? It was weird right away. When I came on and he had offered me a job, there was a little interchange in the office one day after I was working in the closet. He came in and he said, I guess someone else, people were moving up there in droves. Everyone wanted to be a part of this big move of God. And so he had a realtor that he suggested everyone use. And I didn't use that realtor. I used a different realtor. And someone came in and said, do you know a realtor? And I said, hey, yeah, you could use my guy, Joe. He's really good. And John Paul was there and he said, no, everyone here uses Vicky. And said,
that's who remember we had that? To use.
Yeah. That's who he had. And I said, oh, well, Joe gives good presents. And he goes, Vicky gives good gifts too. And I said, well, Joe will drive you around anywhere. And he said, oh, Vicky will too. And then he suddenly looked at me and he got this awful look in his eyes. And he said, everyone here will use Vicky. And I just kind of looked at him. And apparently I stepped on his toes, because after that, he didn't talk to me for a month. He didn't say one word to me. Mm-hmm. And he was going around to the meeting saying, well, God tells me not to speak to people to discipline them. And, you know, and I thought, is that me? Is he talking about me? But I was still so naive. I just couldn't even imagine. But I thought, what did I do wrong? You know, and later, it was months later, I found out that he deemed that as an offense to him and an affront to his authority. And, yeah, it came out to bite me later on, which is a later on story. But I didn't really notice anything until everything started going awry with you guys. I remember someone pulled me aside and said, do you notice anything going weird? And I was still really blinded. I'm like, no, I don't know of anything going on, you know, but it wasn't until I started hearing things in the office. And then, but still then I tried to keep my head low and stay out of it. Cause you know, we had moved up there. I had a job up there. I had little kids. I just really didn't want to have to make another move. I had been through a bad ministry experience. So I kind of tried to keep my head low, but, once the shit hit the fan with you guys, it kind of all came out.
Yeah.
And they came after me a month later. So, yeah.
Yeah. I remember one day, John Paul said, we're coming over to your place to pray for your father-in-law. And so, okay, that's awesome. So they came over, and the way the prayer meetings were is people would sit around and they would have their hands on him and stuff. And this was freaking George out, because he wasn't a church going person or a believer really, even. I mean, he believed in
poor soul,
you know, so here are all this weird stuff's going on. And, you know, somebody started saying he's got the spirit of death on him. And I'm like, I'm like, well, yeah, the guy's dying of cancer. So it just, you know, just was so weird. And then after that, nobody came again anymore to our house, you know.
Wow.
And I mean, our friends did.
Yeah.
Like Mitch and Jeannie and Kelly and Sean and you guys. And
right.
Barb, remember Barb?
Oh, yeah, Barb. Yeah, that's right.
Huh. Ame.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. I knew it was going to get weird before we even moved there. I think we were on our way down and got a call, and he's like, oh, by the way, he said, I've hired you a new worship leader. or a new assistant. He's your assistant from now on. I'm like, I thought I was the pastor. Yeah, I promise I won't do this again. But he kept doing it, right? This is your leadership team. This is your, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew, oh, no, this is going to get weird. This is going to get weird. I just predicted it.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was there, I was the only one that could do any music. So it started with me. I don't think Kelly was even going to the church at that time. I don't know why she wasn't, but.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of weird. Anyway, and then, you know, you came in. So then it was like, well, you incorporated me into it. And then, you know, but it kept being this little, he would just bring everybody on and fruit basket upset everything. And he didn't matter where anything laid. I mean, he used to just pick people out like chess pins and put them in different jobs.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter who was offended. In fact, sometimes he did it to offend people because he wanted that their spirit or their soul to leave them and be smushed, you know, because that would make them more godly, according to his way. But really it was a way of controlling us. Yeah.
So, we were, Lisa and I, we got pretty close with, Mitch and Jeannie, and Jeannie was his personal assistant.
Yes.
And, Sean and Kelly. And, you know, there was some weird stuff going on. Like we would be getting together with them and, Greg.
Greg Mapes.
Yeah, Greg and what was his wife's name?
Greg and Patty. Yes. Oh my, yes.
Yeah, they would come and we would catch them spying on us.
Yes.
At our homes at night.
I'd hear about it. I'd hear that you and Mitch were sitting on the porch smoking cigars and talking and were up to no good. You were planting this whole Jezebel conspiracy.
Oh.
And I'd say, they were on the porch having a smoke. You know, what's that? Crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy stuff. And then, you know, and then we started to get really paranoid because there was all this weird stuff going on. And Mitch's office was broken into one day with some files gone and his computer had been looked into. And just a bunch of stuff. And then I think when it started getting really weird was, was in December. Lisa's father was really going downhill fast. Oh, and at the same time, this was why I was so emotional about it. The stress of everything had gotten to Lisa so much that she was, well, we didn't know what was wrong. We really didn't know what was wrong. We wondered if she had some kind of a virus or cancer or something, because she was pretty much bedridden, very, very sick, and losing weight. And it was a terrifying, terrifying experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, her trying to take care of her dad and me trying to go to work at Streams and the church. And, oh, it was just awful. And then there was a meeting. He sent out a memo. No, we had a meeting. We had a meeting late in the workday.
Yes.
We all had to go.
Yes, I remember.
I'm like, shoot, I got to get home and help Lisa, you know, because of her dad and everything. And then there was this meeting and he was up front and he was really upset because his book sales were down. And he was concerned. And Benny Hinn or something fell through with Benny Hinn, he was hoping that would be a avenue to be selling more books, and something fell through there. And
he was sick all the time because he was
John
on
Paul
the
was
road.
Getting sick.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And with like colds.
Yeah, colds. Yeah.
And then somebody said, there's sin in the camp. And I knew, oh no, here we go. Oh. And he started crying, and this was affirmation from the Lord that this was a true word. And and then I know, like, there were, this is what really upset me, was there were some women that gathered around him and were like really literally, were you there?
Yes, I was there. They
literally
were
physically touching him. Like, it was like,
they were kneeling at his feet, laying their heads on his knees, crying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And repental. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And wiping their tears with their hair, kind of stuff. Like, it was so, it was so bizarre. I was like, I've seen some weird shit, but this is like really, really weird. And I went home and I said to Lisa, honey, we better fasten our seatbelts. I feel like something's going down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because if when there's sin in the camp, then everybody's a target. So, and I think John Paul and I, things were strained because he had made it to this point where I couldn't even talk with him directly. Remember, he sent out a memo. I will no longer receive anybody's emails or phone calls.
Yes.
You have to go through. So, and so I'm like, well, I was directly under him as the pastor. And it's like, I couldn't even talk to him.
Anyway, I remember that.
So, the next day, a memo was sent out that we had to do reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
I remember that too. Yes. Oh. Oh boy.
So we had to all go around to everybody in the office.
Yeah.
And how many employees were there at the time?
Oh, by then I bet we had 25, 30 people, don't you think?
Probably.
At least maybe 50. The people, you know, kept coming. Yeah.
And we had to go around to everybody and confess our sin, and so that it would get sin out of the camp so that he could get his book sales back up.
Well, you know, I remember when I first got there, we were there a couple of weeks, and Greg sat us all in the boardroom. This was, I think, before you got there even, and said, now you people are part of the A team. You are now the most privileged people in the world. You get to work with John Paul and you get to be with John Paul. But make no mistakes, any miracles you do, any dreams you have, they're all because you're under John Paul. They're really his miracles and his prophetic dreams. They're not yours. And I know that you got here because you had a relationship with John Paul, but from now on, we will not let you be with John Paul. He's inaccessible to you. Basically, that's what he said.
Yeah.
And that was before the memo, you know, because some of us thought, you know, forget that. But yeah, they really, they put him in an iron cage so we couldn't get near him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that day of doing the reconciliation thing, a couple of people came in to my office and said, I just want to confess. I'm like, I'm not playing. Sorry. They're like, what? I'm not playing. I believe in repentance and reconciliation, but not under a gun, you know, like I'm just not going to do it. Like,
yeah.
And they're like, oh, we really need to. We have to. I'm like, no. And the one who went and reported me was, he's dead now too.
Really?
Who? What's her name's husband?
Oh, Justin.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Was like, he went and reported that Dave's not cooperating. And so then of course I became the sin in the camp.
Uh-huh. Yes, of course.
Obviously, cause I wasn't playing. And then, I was so offended by what happened at that meeting with the women around John Paul, you know, bowing at his feet and him, you know, that big scene.
Yeah.
But I wrote him a letter.
Yeah.
An email.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't see him. So I wrote an email. I wrote an email and I, you know what? I should see if I can find that sometime. Anyway, I said to Lisa, read this. She said, yeah, that's fair and clear and kind and everything. And I said, should I send it? She goes, well, yeah. So I remember, I do remember as clear as day pressing that send button. And it was the next day we got called in. Like that's when everything blew up. It became, oh my goodness. And now at the same time, like this is, we're getting close to Christmas. It's like the week before Christmas.
Yep.
Lisa's dad's getting sicker. Lisa's getting sicker. By this time, she's lost like 30 pounds and very sick and no diagnosis, nothing. And she's going for lung x-rays and, you know,
all
kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And I get called into the boardroom and there's John Paul and Greg and a lawyer.
The boardroom with all the glass
that
one could watch. Yeah.
And there's a tape recorder set up with a microphone and I have to sit down there and he says, we're recording this meeting, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what's going on? He said, basically he said, we're having real issues with you. And anyway, John, and meanwhile, they're talking back and forth with the lawyer. This is all on tape. You know what? I still have that tape and I haven't had the guts to listen to it.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, they're like trying to figure out a way to fire me and asking me what's the intent behind the letter and how uncomfortable with that I was and that I felt John Paul invited and loved people worshiping him. And I had a real issue with that. And, you know, anyway, the lawyer finally... When John Paul said he refused to participate in the ministry-wide reconciliation exercise, the lawyer said, well, that's your grounds for firing him, insubordination. And John Paul's like, okay, then you're fired for insubordination. I'm going, yeah, whatever.
Wow.
Like, it was just, by that time, it was like, I knew I was done.
Uh-huh.
And, so they said, you've got 10 minutes to gather your stuff and get out of the building.
Man, like a criminal.
So I was, you know, that was the end of my time at Streams. I get home, Lisa's sick, her father's sick. And then it was like the next day, I believe it was the next day that George actually died, her father. Of course, you know, a lot of people would interpret that as God's judgment or
God's judgment. Right? Yes, and, absolutely. I heard that. I heard that in the office.
Yeah. And that Lisa was sick because of God's judgment. And, so anyway, here I am fired. Lisa's father dies. Now I'm an illegal alien.
Right. Because you're Canadian.
I own a home down there. We just bought a brand new van. And anyway, we got to go to Alabama and bury her dad. And we come back and find out that we're not going to get our last paycheck. Because after I was fired, then a bunch more people got fired, including Mitch and Jeannie. And
Mitch and Jeannie got fired. Kelly quit and Monique quit.
Monique quit.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't long after that you quit.
It was 3 weeks later they came after me. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. How did they come after you again?
Well, that was really interesting because right after Mitch quit, you know, because I was, by this time I was working under Mitch. So it was Mitch and me and Kelly and Monique were working under Mitch doing events. And when they all quit, there it was. My whole department was gone, right? Mm. And Monique stayed on for one more month to kind of get me going. And they brought Amanda into the department.
Yeah.
And then what happened was one day, because now they had this pastoral vacancy. And so John Paul was thinking, oh, Tom's a pastor, my husband. So they decided to court us and take us out to lunch. So I'll never forget. We went out to lunch over in that place. Was it called? I don't remember the name of that place. It was in New London. And there was this, it was overlooking Mount Kearsarge, was overlooking it. And you could sit in and you could see it. And we went there a lot on Sundays after church.
Yeah, I remember the place.
Remember the place? Yeah. So Patty and Greg were there, and John Paul and Diane, and I think Micah might have been there because we were all eating and our kids were there. And John Paul and Greg were talking to Tom about being the pastor. And I could tell Patty was just like mad. She just wanted no part of this. She didn't want Tom to be the pastor. She was over there making faces. Greg was kind of mad and antagonistic. John Paul was open to having Tom be the pastor. So he was talking to him about doing this. And Tom wanted no part of it. He had seen what went down with you guys. He said, there is no way that I'm putting my family through this. You know, it's bad enough you're in the middle of this situation. Our income cannot be relying on this too.
Right.
So he didn't bite, you know? So the very next day, John Paul meets me in the office, in the kitchen, and he looks at me and he says, I have a word from God for you. And I said, really? You know, and still at that point, I was still mesmerized by, oh, a word from God.
Yeah.
So he says, well, Tom is not ready to be a pastor. He doesn't understand leadership. And here's the thing. He said, you are, he said, he's probably a year out of being ready to be a pastor. Second of all, you're overweight, because he doesn't understand leadership. And I think that's why you're gaining weight while you're here. He said that to me. Mm-hmm. And then he said, and your children are damned. Your children are damned. And I looked at him and I thought, whoa. And you know what I did? I cried and I thanked him for that word. And then I started crying and I went back to my desk and I cried a little. And at the end of the day, Greg called me into the boardroom. Mm-hmm. And there I was in the boardroom with the big glass at the big table. And in the boardroom was Greg and what was the name of the guy? Doug, who was the shipping department. Yes. And he gave him Mitch's job. As soon as he ousted Mitch, he gave Mitch's job to Doug. And so Greg says, well, I guess you're wondering why you're here. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, you know, I understand John Paul gave you a word this morning. And I said, uh-huh. And I started to cry. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm crying. I must be PMSing. Here I was still apologizing for my emotions. And he said, no, that's not it. He said, you're crying because it was a true word from God. And he said, and furthermore, we think you have a big problem with authority. And here is why. And he went on to recount the time that I had that little realtor exchange with John Paul when I came on. Mm-hmm. That showed that I was not, you know, I was not compliant to authority. And then he said, furthermore, you and Doug were talking by Barbie's office. And Barbie came out and you said to Doug, let's move down the hall so we don't bother her. And he said, you, Doug is your boss. And for you to say, Doug, let's move down the hall is direct defiance of authority. And I looked at him and I thought, you know, I'm not even going to get into this on his level. And I just looked at him. And I said, you know what? Doug wasn't my boss then. And he goes, And so he says, so this is what we're going to do. We've decided we're going to let you keep your job, but as events planner, but we're not going to let you travel. And I knew at that point I was totally set up because I had been on some times when I could tell that the MAPES had been setting me up. And mm-hmm. and by this time I was having dreams, like that they were giving me cups of water full of garbage mm-hmm. and all these really bizarre dreams. And he said, so we're going to let you plan the events, but you can't travel. And you know, if you plan an event, you're going to forget something. The second I was going to forget something, they were going to throw the book at me and that was going to be it.
Right.
Well, you know, it really all came down to a few things. I had been traveling with John Paul. I told him about something their son was doing in the office that was not cool. And so they had to come after me for that. That was one of the problems. Mm-hmm. The other problem was that, you know, I guess they felt that I was getting too much power in the ear. But, excuse me. the other thing that was like really amazing to me was it had been that morning that my daughter had a dream, and she was in fifth grade, and we had taught her, you know, write down your dreams. Mm-hmm. And her dream that morning was amazing. And she had this dream. She wrote it down in this little book with a wolf. I still have the little book. Mm-hmm. And in this dream, she talked about a good king and a good queen, and they had a beautiful kingdom. And they ran it with love. And they had these heart-shaped pendants that fit together. And the whole kingdom was happy. And they had a son. Well, then these traitors came in, these evil murderers, and killed the king and the queen. And they took his son and raised him as their own and called him Judas. And this son was raised in the ways of evil. But he kept recounting the good that he knew from his real mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And when he turned 16, you're going to like this. When he turned 16, he threw off, he got out of bed, threw off the sheets, went into the bedroom of his parents, took back those necklaces and fled. And all these, you know, people tried to kill him. He got to this new town. He threw off his cloaks and he said, I am no longer Judas. My name is David. But this was her dream, this little girl. And she gave it to me and said, God told me to give you this dream, mommy. And I didn't even read it that day. And it was that day that I was driving into the office that inside I started saying on my 20-minute drive, nobody can steal my destiny. Nobody can steal my destiny. Nobody can steal my destiny. So, you know, I knew something was coming, and it came. So anyway, at that point, I looked at Greg and I said, you know what? I need to think about this. I don't know that I want to do this. And I took my 2 weeks, just left them hanging. And then I went into his office and I said, I quit. I don't want to have any part of this. Mm-hmm. But Tom had said to me, I want to see what happens at the church. I'm interested to see what goes on. So he actually encouraged me to stay on at the church. We were there for another 2 months mm-hmm. just watching. And I was still part of the worship ministry for Streams, and I was at a conference, and I was up there singing, and I saw people that knew me through my father. And I thought, wow, I can't keep up this facade anymore. I am telling people that this is okay, and I know this is not okay. And that night on the way home, we had a really bad worship session. On the way home, we hit a moose. It came out, it hit our van, and shredded the window all over Trevor and I. We were full of glass shards, but we weren't hurt. And the next day, John Paul went to that conference and said, God talked to me yesterday and asked me if it was okay if I took home some of his people and I prayed for their lives, and so they're okay. And when I heard he used that, I just, you know, I called up Trevor and I said, no, I quit. I want nothing to do with this ever again.
Yeah.
And he said, you're going to regret it. And I said, no, I don't think so. And that was it. That was it.
Wow.
But, you know, it didn't take long before I was shunned. I was still friends with some people. And then all of a sudden, nobody wanted to have anything to do with me. And it wasn't until a year later that one of the people who had shunned me, who was supposedly my friend, came to me and said, you know, John Paul went to everybody in the office after you left and said, whatever you want to know about Tom and Ruth, I'll tell you. They're awful people. They're sick. They have a terrible sex life, blah, 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 blah. He just smeared us to the ground. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard he did that with us too, but I,
he did. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard he went around and told people things like I was haughty or proud or ambitious and I wanted his job, or my problem was that I thought I was a peer with him and stuff like that. But
Yeah, damage control. But you know what? I mean, what he said about you, I remember listening to him and I thought, well, you know, so what? Yeah. I remember thinking, how is that a problem? You know?
Yeah. Crazy. So, yeah. So Lisa's father dies in her home. Our three kids are, how old would they have been? Like young, right? Like 10, 12, and 14 or something like that, or 15.
Cassiel, I think Cassiel was Kristen's age. So, Kristen was like 10 or 11. Yeah.
So that would have been, so 10, 13, and 15, something like that.
Yeah.
And George dies at night in our house, and the ambulance comes and takes him away in a bag. And, you know, very, very traumatic. We're all very upset. And, you know, we have to get him to Alabama to bury him. And not one person from like John Paul and all them, not one word, not one visit, nothing. The only people that we saw after that was like you guys.
Yeah.
Trevor came by. His daughter, Amaya, came by. Barb came by. They were two young people.
Right.
And of course, we saw Mission Jeannie and Shauna Kelly, and but nobody from the church or streams, not one word, not a flower, not nothing. It was just like, and so we had to go to Alabama and did that, took care of that, and we came back like a week later, and we had to move back to Canada, like we had to scram, you know. So and Lisa's like, I'm out of here. So she piled the kids in the van and our other old van and took off back to Canada. I'm like, just leave me here. I'll take care of everything. So I had to put the house up for sale.
Yeah.
I had to take the brand new car back to the dealer and they ripped me off so bad. Like I lost so much money there. Fortunately, we made a little bit of money on the house, but nobody, I had to go and get Jesse's drums and stuff from the school where we did church.
Oh yeah.
And the only time I could do it was on a Sunday morning when they were having church. Talk about awkward, me walking in there. And nobody said one word to us. They all moved away like it was the Red Sea parting, and nobody said a word. Nobody helped me.
Yeah.
And it was like we were anathema. And we never got our last paycheck, and they told us before we would get our last paycheck or a severance pay that I had to sign a gag order and a no fly zone. Mm-hmm. And, I said, no, you know, on the gag order was something like, I'll never tell anybody what happened, nor will my children, nor will my children's children. It was like, oh my soul, how Old Testament can you get? Anyway, it was, we never signed it. And, so I never got severance pay. I did go after the government thing. And they did tell them they had to pay us our last paycheck, but so I fortunately sold the house within a month, and, I went back to Canada, and that was it, man. It took me, when I left there, I was like, that's it. I'm done. I am done. Yeah. Like, and it wasn't so much like in 1997, I went through a church split, and that was a huge eye opener for me that, you know what, no matter how great a church feels or whatever, there's a dark underbelly to everything. And the same thing happened at Streams. Like we had a blast at first and then it quickly went south. And, it was, for me, it wasn't just an incidental situational thing. To me, it revealed the underbelly of, like what the split did, it revealed the underbelly of the church. What this did was it revealed the underbelly of, you know, trying to do ministry outside of the church or beside the church or whatever. Like, it's just crazy. And, for a long time I was done. I came home and did construction, you know, for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember going into one of the houses that you were flipping, right? You did construction on it and you flipped it. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's when you guys came to visit. That's right.
That's when we came to visit. Yeah. Well, you know, when you were moving too, I remember the day we were moving all your stuff into the moving truck for you to take it back. And some people came by from the church and they looked at us and they said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "We're helping David move." And they looked at us like, "Whoa, you have absolutely no right to do that. I mean, you were now branded a, you know, leper."
Yeah.
Everyone had to stay away.
I don't remember that, really.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why people didn't go near you. They were told to stay away from you. So
yeah, that's right. I do remember hearing that.
Yeah.
I, like, because Trevor came by one time and he was like, "I'm not supposed to be here."
Right. Trevor was really good at coming by, even though he wasn't supposed to be there. He did that for me, too.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah, it was, man, it was an eye-opener for me. And sad. It was very sad, disappointing, because, you know, there's some good things that were happening, and I met some amazing people.
Yeah.
And like you guys, and, you know, we've been friends since. But, yeah, it was disappointing on a very, very existential, fundamental level, you know?
And, yes.
To see how people were used and abused, and you know what, all with sincerity, like, I don't believe John Paul intended to be a mean person.
No,
it all fit his belief systems, right?
Yeah, it did. It did.
He really thought he was an Old Testament prophet type person.
Yeah, he really did. He really did. And you know, there was a time after I left. I read a bunch of stuff on cults. I just read about cults for like 7 months. And read everything I could get my hands on. And I wrote him a letter and said, you know, "You shouldn't be doing this. How dare you do this to me?" And you know, I never heard back. But, you know, I got to a point where I started to think, you know, he's actually got a personality disorder. Since then, I, you know, really think narcissist personality disorder fits the bill, you know. But for a while there, before that wasn't even a common thing, I thought there's something going on. He's not quite right in the head. And I felt for him because usually my radar could tell if someone was sincere or not. And I could tell he was sincere. But his facts weren't lining up after a while. You know, I watched him and I watched him tell stories. I'd hear the same story being told over and over, and I got more and more embellished, every time he told it. And I thought, even when he embellishes it, he really believes what he's saying.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that's why my radar didn't go off like fake fraud, because in his mind, he wasn't a fake or a fraud. He really was doing God's work and he was sincere about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think it was, I came back here for about 4 or 5 years, I did construction and then the pastor, at that time, who was my assistant before, asked me to come back. He took over the church when I left and asked me to come back on. And so I became the pastor again. And anyway, yeah, it took me 4 or 5 years to recover from that. And it was at some point I wrote John Paul a letter because, I don't know, every once in a while I'll do that where I just feel I need to close something, you know, some closure. So I wrote him a letter. You know, accepting any responsibility that I could, but also pointing out that I felt that what happened was really unfair and unkind. And, you know, the level of unkindness that we experienced was pretty amazing, you know.
Yeah.
And he wrote back and it was, you know, it wasn't satisfying, but it was still his attempt to, you know, apologize on one level. And sorry that it didn't work out, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And that we had great plans and all that.
But,
yeah. And Lisa's whole thing, she was, you know, this is after we were fired and John, her dad was already gone. And she was just so fed up with this that she just looked up a psychiatrist number in the phone book down there in New London and went and saw him. It was very expensive. It was something like $250. But he put her through a battery of tests and put her on a cocktail of anti-anxiety and depression medication.
Uh-huh.
And the next day she started feeling normal again.
Wow.
It was like, before then, I didn't really understand the benefit of anxiety and depression drugs, but holy smokes, it was like a miracle.
Wow.
And she started getting better again, you know.
Wow.
Until she no longer had to use them. But yeah, it was that was a ride. And then, you know, coming back here, our kids all responded in their own special ways, you know.
Yes.
With
yes.
their own depressions and anxieties yeah. and panic and acting out, and because yeah. they were put through an incredible ride as well. So
you bet. The kids really suffer from it. Oh, you know,
yeah.
they're completely a part of it. I remember before we went to New Hampshire, I was singing, "We're going to the promised land." I mean, that's how excited I was about going.
Yeah.
And then when the promised land caved in, the kids just looked at me like, what happened?
Yeah.
And we had two other failed ministry experiences after that. We, I didn't go back into ministry. I just couldn't do it. I just started teaching piano lessons and doing my art. But yeah. When we went to North Carolina, Tom took on a church, and I made it very clear to them that I was going to have really no part of it and that my kids were coming first. And
yeah.
that eventually folded because they couldn't handle that I wasn't a part of it.
Right.
And then after that, we actually attended a church where they came after the pastor and his wife in a very similar way that we had gotten it in our initial church. And after that, my kids just, my oldest daughter just can't even go to church. Neither of them really can, you know, because they've seen it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, Lisa and I don't go to, we lasted about 4 more years in the ministry, and then we walked away from the ministry. And, now I do what I do online, but our kids, you know, they have their own, you know, unique lives and spiritualities or whatever, but no, they don't go to church either,
mm-hmm.
but they remember all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very yeah. clearly.
Yeah. Because
that's devastating to them. They, you know, because yeah. they lump it all together, right? Not only
sure.
their own personal experiences and disappointments, but also them being torn out of a school that they'd
Yes.
and friendships that they'd made.
Yes.
But also their grandfather died and yeah. their mom got sick and nearly died, it felt yeah. like.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just... And when we came back, friends let us move in. So we were living in 2 bedrooms in their house
wow.
for like 6 months until we could get back on our feet.
Wow.
My goodness, what a nightmare.
Really was traumatic, wasn't it? I mean, at the time, you just set, you know, you set yourself strong and go through it. But yeah. it's kind of like later you shake and you go, oh, man, I can't believe I went through this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how are you now, like, spiritually? Where would you say you are, and how do you think it affected you spiritually?
It affected me a lot because I don't know if you've ever read that book, Hope for the Flowers. Have you seen that book where all the caterpillars climb this pole? It's this really cool kind of a children's illustrative book where these worms climb this pole and they're knocking everyone off to get to the top because there's something up there they need to get to. Mm-hmm. And they get to the top and lo and behold, they're pushing each other off the edge and they're falling into their deaths. And that's what I think about all the time is I thought mm-hmm. that there was some top I was going to. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to some spiritual ascension.
Yeah.
You know, I had these ideas of God was going to use me in a powerful way. And I would wave my arms and 2,000 people would be healed by the power of God. You know, crazy stuff, yeah. right? And I realized that was one of the hooks, you know. They hooked me right in, this fame and glory kind of power thing. So I walked away from anything that would resemble power spiritually
right.
and tried to take a much more humble kind of approach. And I think for many years, I haven't forsaken God. Because I grew up in the church. My dad was a pastor. My grandpa was a pastor. I come from a long line of pastors and actually rabbis, I've found out. Mm-hmm. And so I would just say, Jesus loves me, this I know, and that's all I know. And so now I'm in a much different place spiritually. I've appreciated a lot of what you've written because I think I'm tracking completely on the same line with you. Mm. But you know, I kind of borrow things from all kinds of different religions. I look at what the Buddhists are doing, or I look at some, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. love yoga, you know, and it's yoga to me is a very spiritual exercise. And, yep. And the thing about yoga is it's not really a religion, you know, and all religions can enter into it. But I see a lot of people that have a deep love for a God source. course. And right. and they give their life to him. And they may not say, oh, I believe that Jesus died on the cross for me. But I kind of feel like there's somewhere here that God resolves everything. And I don't know how it works. And, you know, I guess for me, it's just come down to a love and acceptance. And everybody's on a path. And we don't know which way that path leads us. And I have a real hard time with people being belligerent and saying this is this and this is that, because I think we all think we know more than we know. Mm-hmm. My dad used to say to me when I'd be very distinct. I heard God. God said this, and he'd say, you know, some people know more than they know, and I'd be mad because I'd think, come on, Dad, you can know this. And as I've been getting older, I'm realizing that we really know very little. And do I believe that God exists and created the world and loves me? Yes, I believe that. Do I believe people have different expressions of love and worship? Yes, I believe that. And do I think that God is going to reject someone's expression of love and worship because it didn't come into a Western packaged form? No, you know, I just don't. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a, if I say it to someone who are my friends in church, they get mad at me. They think I'm crazy, or they pray for me and don't talk to me again, which is why I just don't go anymore. I kind of can't stand formalized religion. I kind of can't stand anything that reeks of control, or even if I get a whiff of control, you know, or accountability out of concern, I run the other way.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
We're the same. Like, that was a really, really good... Did you prepare that? Synopsis of what you believe now? Because that was really good. I think a lot of people on TLS would identify with what you said. Not everybody, but a lot. Yeah?
Yeah. Top of my head. Yeah.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. One of the things that I really was into, and it began in the Vineyard and really came to fruition under John Paul Jackson, was that sense of destiny. And, you know, I really felt like I was on a trajectory for something huge, you know, and I was always had that feeling. And, you know, walking away from that, you know, I no longer have that sense of destiny. And I miss it sometimes because it really brought a lot of comfort and excitement and, you know, and meaningfulness for life and everything. So it's like a drug, really. And it's taken me a long time to get used to living without that. It doesn't mean I don't feel like my life has meaning, or it doesn't mean like that there isn't a destiny. It just, you know, I was so certain I had one and kind of knew what it was going to be, you know? So it was like, anyway, that's totally changed. And yeah, it's a lot of different way to live, but it's a lot healthier too. And like you, I go the other way when I smell control. I'm not willing to make that trade.
No.
Anymore.
No, me neither. Me neither. And you know, sometimes it just puts me as a person that's kind of on the outs. And, you know, like even hanging out in art school, if people were getting too like, well, let's all do this, and anything came up to be too much of a leadership thing, I would walk the other way and think, nah, I don't want to do that. And I just go off alone because, you know, it's just not worth it to me anymore. Yeah.
Well, listen, Ruth, it's... We're going on an hour.
Wow.
I thought we might go an hour.
Yeah.
At least. So.
Yeah.
But I think we should stop it there. And if people, I'm going to post the link to this later.
Okay.
And if people say, oh man, it would be good to have a follow up with some questions. Because I know a lot of people on TLS have experienced something similar or have been influenced by the same kind of leadership that we experienced under John Paul Jackson. Mm-hmm. So it'll be kind of cool maybe to follow up with a video conference.
Sure. Love to.
Yeah. That'd be kind of neat. We could field some questions and stuff.
Yeah.
And they can look us in the eye and see that we're not insanely crazy. Anyway, love to you, Ruth.
This was great. Love to you, David. It was great.
And your family.
Yeah, you too. Okay. Yeah. Your family too. Okay. Take care. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Well, everybody, that was my friend, Ruth. We've known each other for many years and shared some pretty horrible experiences at streams. Anyway, I hope you find that interesting and maybe instructive and hopefully helpful. She's known better on Facebook as Anne Clay. So anyway, we hope to follow up with maybe a video conference or something like that. Hope you enjoyed it. Okay, TLSers, have a great day. Bye.